We have A&W, Sunkist, 7-Up, Nantucket Nectars, Snapple, so it's going both ways.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we go deep inside the Polar Seltzer Factory in Worcester, Massachusetts. Well, we thought we'd do a little something different here for the Thanksgiving holiday and take a break from the daily politics that have consumed this podcast over the last few months. Earlier this fall, I found myself taking a road trip to a Cape Cod wedding. Having driven by Worcester a few times over the years, I thought it would make a good excuse to investigate one of my passions, seltzer. So I set up a visit to the Polar Factory. If you've ever been a tourist in Atlanta, home to the Coca-Cola factory, or the Bay Area, where Jelly Belly jelly beans are made, you might be picturing my visit to Polar. But it wasn't exactly the same setup. No gift shop, no catwalk for tourists beyond the reach of the assembly line. Instead, Polar Executive Vice President Christopher Crowley took me on a tour of a round-the-clock factory that has been in his family for 140 years. We started in his office.
Since 1882, and my great-grandfather was in the water business. He was also in the whiskey business. And when you think of his whiskey business, he made Crowley Ballbrook whiskey. And he sold it by the bottle, paydays. Back in the day, you couldn't, as an Irishman, get a job in a factory in Worcester. So there were signs, Irish need not apply. And that was real. So he made whiskey, and payday he would sell, he had a horse-drawn carriage, I'll show you a picture, okay. Spectacular. He would sell bottles of straight Ballbrook whiskey for $1 a bottle. So he was very successful.
How did the family wind up here?
Well, we've been in Worcester for generations. We were the Irish Lace Irish. I mean, we were, you know, three or four generations before the potato famine. So we've been here a long time.
So then how did the seltzer start? I mean, that was a sideline at the beginning?
Well, we have a spring in Leicester, Arctic Polar Springs in Leicester, Spencer. And there wasn't clean water back in the late 1800s. You know, horses would march along and poop on the street, and then you'd be drinking the water. And there was a lot of pathogens in water. So we would literally provide good, clean water. And if you look at, that was us.
Yeah, we're looking at a glass bottle, early.
Siphon bottle.
Wow.
Yeah, and like the Three Stooges spray bottle.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, it's like 24 ounces, but this is what he did. Our first experiences with Holy Cross football, and it's big. They're doing very well this season, but they used to play BC and beat them regularly. But we would have the Polar truck, and Ralph and I would slip in the back of the Polar truck, and we were probably 9 or 10 years old, and we'd compete with the concessions because we'd sell Polar directly off the truck. So we were there monetizing. And of course, nothing went to the company. We sold those little bottles one at a time in the stands, and I don't think we ever watched a play of the game, but we would sell the Polar directly. So I really started, you know, kind of on and off quite a bit when I was 11 years old, and it was glass bottles and they'd bang into each other. And tell my father, that's sold out, I got a headache, Dad. Kids don't get headaches. So it was just a
What year was this?
Oh, back in the early 60s.
How much were you selling those bottles for then?
Oh, probably, you know, 25 cents, 10 cents, something like that, yeah.
Did you tell me on the phone that your first job was like extracting the ginger from ginger ale or something?
Well, I've done that quite a bit. We, you know, to make ginger, it takes months to marinate the oils. You have to break it down with ethyl alcohol. There's all kinds of powders. It's a long process, and it was fun. I mean, you'd smell like ginger for about a month because your hands would be brown for the ginger roots. So it was just a long process, and it was a great learning thing because it was dangerous because it was ethyl alcohol you're working with. So you had pneumatic pumps. You couldn't have an electric pump because you'd blow the place up. So you learned a lot about science and keeping these things soluble and floating in the liquid. So,
was there a lot of trial and error with that?
Well, no, it was ancient batches. I have great handwritten directions on how to make this stuff with that meticulous penmanship that only happened in the 20s and the late 1800s. And it was my great-grandfather's writing. And it was just the recipe. So you just followed the recipe. And it was an old German guy that would teach me how to do this. He just retired a month ago. He was here for 63 years.
Have the recipes changed a lot over time?
You know, they have in the beverage industry a lot. If you look at Polar Orange Dry, that's what it's always been. And that's what orange soda used to be. Orange oil, orange juice, citric acid, very, very simple. But it's really expensive. So what's happened is, you know, we make a lot of other oranges. We make 4,500 different items here. So
wow.
We see what the other stuff is like. Geez, there's, you know, 56 different ingredients in there, none of them resembling an orange, where ours is very, very simple. It's a lot more expensive, but it's what, you know, things used to be. But it's easier. It's much less stable to make that orange, that real natural orange dry, because it has 10% juice in there, and that juice can oxidize with light and just oxygen. It's perishable, where a lot of the stuff is, you know, it's nuclear. It has a half-life of about 1 billion years, so it's never going to go bad. Our stuff goes bad. You want food that rots.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Then it will taste more natural.
Yeah. So it's very natural, very simple recipes, and we've followed those same recipes. I mean, if you look at that recipe book from the 20s, it's the same thing now, where flavored palates change, and a lot of the industry just kept adding more and more sugar. We have typically about 20-30% less sugar than a lot of our competitors, the national brands, but they're the way they used to be.
We have friends in Atlanta, so we've been to the Coke Museum a few times, and they will not tell you what the ultimate recipe is. There's only a few people who know. Is that the case here?
There are no secrets. It's easy to make a Coke or a Pepsi, and it's very inexpensive. But it's a style, and, you know, Coke is a little less sweet than PepsiCo. Pepsi has a little more sugar, but it's pretty easy to make a cola, and colas are very inexpensive. It's just a little homogenizer that you make the cola with. So it's a very simple product. Ginger ale is a lot tougher product. There's some complicated formulas.
Polar Executive Vice President Christopher Crowley speaking in his office during a WAMC factory tour this fall. Next up, the floor itself. And as you'll hear, it's an overwhelming sensory experience.
So how many people work here?
Well, here at any one time, there are a couple hundred, but we have about 2,200 employees. I ran the night shift for 10 years.
Wow.
So you learn a lot, you know, when you're here at night, because you don't have electricians, plumbers, welders. So I was the electrician, plumber, welder, batcher, truck driver. So you did everything.
You must have learned, like, the company inside and out doing that.
Yeah, 10 years. And you'd start at, you'd start officially at 5 at night. But a lot of times you wouldn't be done till 8 the next morning. So it was a minimum 12, 14-hour day every day, all night.
That must really kind of change how your life is going to be.
Well, you know, it does. And you know, if you look what a doctor has to go through, they work all the time. And you learn a lot when you're here all the time. So the learning curve is like that. So for decades. So I drive my people nuts because I've been here so long and I know every sound in the building. That happened 50 years ago. I remember it.
Well, that's experience. I mean, you can't replace that, right? You must have had a lot of different types of jobs during that time, too.
Well,
or responsibilities. Yeah.
Yeah, from sales, product development, name it. I had an uncle who was, he was the president of the company. And, like, when you're dealing with people, be whatever, you can be the president of the company. Just tell them what you need to tell them.
So this is, what'd you say on the phone? Willy Wonka's factory?
We have a lot of little things that are broken right now. So that water line is busted. We're rebuilding this filler. So, and we have a big heat exchanger that busted on line 7. So it's been a tough.
That kind of thing must happen all the time. There's probably
not really. We have a very good maintenance staff, and we've invested so much
I mean, all these electrical services, all brand new. These are new compressors. So we've invested so much money in the really boring stuff in the plant, but it's so important to have the latest and greatest refrigeration systems, because if you have old, inefficient stuff, you're going to go broke.
And is this plant operating 24/7?
We try to, but we've had trouble sourcing carbon dioxide.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We've actually had, we lost 20 shifts this summer. Otherwise, we'd be running 24/7.
So we're walking through right now, and it is busy, loud, a little wet. A lot of machinery, a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, this used to be just the factory on the other side of that wall. These are all new additions.
Wow.
And we had enough room for all the finished goods. We're so, you know, so crammed now, we have no room for finished goods here. So we have 9 warehouses around the city. So everything is made, put directly on a truck and sent elsewhere.
And all those warehouses are in Worcester?
Well, Worcester, Springfield, Oxford,
wow. Okay.
Auburn, a lot in Auburn. So these are all electric fork trucks with quick charges. The old days we used to have gas fork trucks and it looked like you worked in a parking garage because it'd be smoke in the building.
Oh, wow.
So the electric trucks are so nice.
When did you make that change?
It's been an evolution, but really in the late 90s.
Okay. Wow. So in this part, we're starting to see like more finished product, it looks like.
Yeah, this is a kid seltzer. So these are 7.5-ounce cans.
I find the 12 to be a kid size. Wow.
And it has to be very cold. So it's cold for the CO2 to dissolve in the liquid. If we're warm, it would boil right out. So we have to have it nice and cold. What's this? Is it unicorn piss? Yeah, this. We made the unicorn piss in a 1-liter bottle, and it was so popular.
This is like a stroke of genius.
Or luck. Half of luck is genius, yeah.
That was like a viral thing.
It was, yeah.
Wow. So what's happening to this part of the process?
Well, the empty cans are coming overhead.
Okay.
We can go over here and...
Okay.
So that's brandy new.
New flavor?
No, the packer.
Okay.
So we're filling them here and we're putting the lids on over here.
Do you know how many cans are being made in a day? Is it in the millions?
Oh, it's tens of millions. So we make each line, we have 3 can lines. Each can line runs about 60,000 cases a day.
Wow.
So you have 3 times 60,000 times 24.
I'm not that good at math, but
it's a lot.
That's a lot of seltzer. That's too much to keep up. Wow.
So we have to warm the product up here.
Oh yeah.
So it doesn't all sweat.
So this is, these small cans are coming out wet and hot at this point of the
So these warmers are so efficient. When I put these in, we save 30% of our gas use. So you can see the lights just turning on when they sense us.
Yeah.
We put a new boiler in out here, and it's kind of tricky. This is a big 500 horsepower boiler, so it's nice and quiet. But we use this to pasteurize product, so we can run very sensitive products that you have to pasteurize. And it's brand new, and I was on a Zoom call. Can't be politically correct, but the city was talking, we're going to be an all-electric city. And I said, well, we're a food manufacturer. We just put a 500 horsepower boiler in. We spent millions. And if you're trying to heat this water with electricity, you'd need a nuclear power plant next to it. It's very efficient, incredibly practical. And when you look at the use of gas, it runs probably at 98% efficient. If you think about producing electricity somewhere, sending that here, you get about 44% of the electricity here. So it's a tremendous challenge to be, we are very, very green. We do things as efficiently as you can, because you really have to, because it makes you money. It's just wise use of resources. But it's, to go all electric is pretty tricky. Natural gas is so efficient.
Right. A lot of industries are having the same challenge.
Oh yeah.
We're like walking under some overhead stuff right now. Now we're back in the middle of the plant. This is the sound of the cardboard boxes for the cans.
Star wheel on the back side, glued together. I love these glue machines. I used to buy these things for about $1,500. Now they're so complicated, they cost about $150,000.
What is it? What does it do?
It's just, it glues the box together. But it does so in a very smart manner, because you see it ramps up and down in speed, so this modifies the glue bead to be precisely what's needed. Not too much, not too little.
Wow. That's something I never would have thought about.
It's hard, yeah.
It seems like there's a lot of problem solving in this room.
Oh, there's so many challenges, and we have guys that are up to the task all the time. Yeah.
You can see photos and videos of the tour at WIMC.org and on our social media pages. My guide for the tour is Polar Executive Vice President Christopher Crowley. At this point, he's showing me the labels that are destined for cans and bottles.
These are like the uncut baseball cards.
Exactly, yeah. It's so funny you say that, because where they're made, they make baseball cards.
Oh, really?
But they make the really fancy memorabilia cards where they take a fabric from Babe Ruth's shirt and put a little thread in there.
Yeah.
And they charge like $500 for a baseball card. But, you know, look at all the labels up top. So there are labels everywhere here.
Wow.
And it's really hard, because you deal with states that come up with a new law. So Connecticut wants to go with a 10-cent deposit. And they want to have a specific indicia on their label. And, you know, well, it's just easy. Just change. Like, well, we have 4,500 different labels that we make, and to change it, and then somebody else to change. You can't throw this stuff away. You've got $10 million worth of labels sitting here.
So you got to time it for when one of the states might change the law. Well, what do you think about the bottle bill conversation?
The bottle bill is, it's fine, but it's inefficient. Back in the day, we didn't have curbside recycling.
Right.
Curbside can be the most efficient solution, but the bottle bill has the cleanest material. But it's a redundant system, so we should have one or the other. But there are a lot of other things that can be recycled besides just, you know, aluminum and plastic. All I know is glass is the worst. When I was a kid, we had glass around here. That's 15 stitches here, 6 stitches here. Every day somebody would get cut. I had a piece of glass stuck in my baby finger for 7 years.
Oh my gosh.
Because glass was everywhere. You'd grab a wrench and start tightening it, and you'd get a piece of glass embedded in your hand.
But wow. So you don't do any glass anymore?
We have, you don't want to do glass in this factory. We have glass packed at other factories for us.
What's the timeline for, like, when you're making a new seasonal flavor or something, how far out do you have to think of it and start getting the ball rolling?
Well, it takes some time. It takes, you have to do studies on how it does with heat and sunlight. So you have to do accelerated shelf life tests. So for our, we're trying to finish up on our summer seasonals right now.
Okay, for next summer.
For next summer. But we have the concepts and the ideas. It's a continuous effort. So we have a big, a minor breakdown on this line. So it's gonna be down until Monday.
What happened? Can you say?
It's a heat exchanger.
Okay.
On our refrigeration unit. And it's complicated. So our guys are taking it apart, and it's a plate and frame heat exchanger.
So right now we're standing in just a wall of different products, different cans, and they're
Gosling's ginger beer.
Yeah, we have this.
Dark and Stormy.
Yeah.
So we formulated this. We invented that formula.
It seems to be a hit.
Oh, wow.
I think this is her favorite, right? Yeah, that's the one.
Coconut.
Yeah. Yep. We brought some Polar in the car. I said we're bringing Coles to Newcastle. Wow. Some of these I honestly haven't seen before.
Oh, we make everything, yeah. This is a private label.
So that's made for a specific store to sell?
Yeah. Hello, Ernie.
Did
so
I read?
These are the empty cans before we single file them to run them down to the filler.
Did I read something about a partnership with Dr. Pepper for distribution, or?
Yes, we work with Keurig Dr. Pepper for Polar seltzers around the country. And it's a blockbuster deal according to Goldman Sachs. And it allows us to get to the next level around the country, because to start another factory in California and pretend that you're gonna suddenly distribute, you can't do it. You need to have that synergies of 10 or 12 other things on the truck, or 100 other things on the truck. So it's
so basically, like, they have the infrastructure in place, and then you're able to.
And we do the same with them.
Right.
So we have A&W, Sunkist, 7-Up, Nantucket Nectars, Snapple. So it's going both ways.
How did that deal get put together? That must have been a big one.
30 years of relationship, easily 30 years of relationships.
So. Wow.
So that's broken, that heat exchanger. It's a plate and frame heat exchanger. So this is a very standard part you'd see in a lot of dairies, where liquid goes in one side and gets cooled or heated. So it's just a plate and frame heat exchanger.
So right now this is
down,
but bottleneck.
We have two other can lines running at 1,200 cans a minute. So, and it's almost November, so it's a little bit slow. We can afford to do big construction.
What are the big months?
Oh, May, June. That's, things are really very busy. You have to build inventory preparing for summer months.
When everyone wants to have their cooler full.
You can't see it, but right over there, there's two big tanks, 62 feet high, of spring water.
How much does that hold?
Oh, probably a couple hundred thousand gallons, 240.
Wow. No.
So these guys are big tanks.
Where does all that water come from?
Where does all that water come from? We're a very, very big water user in the city.
A lot of our water is just city water that we clean, and we clean it with reverse osmosis. But then people want spring water. So we have a spring in Plimpton, Mass, and we use a couple of other springs in New Hampshire. We truck that in here. So right out here.
Oh, okay.
Couple spring water tanks right here.
They're even bigger than I imagined.
Yeah. A little thing outside, but no
big.
Holy
cow.
And then that pad is going to be additional CO2 storage.
Okay. So. And you said, I think you said on the phone that, because we were talking right before the train strike was averted, and that the CO2 not getting here would be a huge problem.
CO2 is kind of the lifeblood of what we do when you're selling, you know, sparkling. CO2 is vitally important. And what we've done is, where we can, we use nitrogen as an inert gas to move liquids, but it doesn't carbonate the product. So we have a bunch of labs. So what's this? It's a refractometer. It bends the light and determines how much solid's in a product.
So this looks like just a kind of like a chem lab.
Yeah, it's just a very simple lab, and we have other labs near the equipment so they can determine, you know, how much CO2. This, I think that guy, I can't remember what that guy does. I think it's a titration device. It measures the amount of acid in a product. That's CO2, how much, you know, sugar. And we have things that measure how much CO2.
At this point, Christopher Crowley is about to take us upstairs for a bird's eye view.
Tons of pallets. Water coolers.
You can see the robots, because they have to run round bottles, square bottles, rectangular bottles. So a robot has a lot more flexibility than a standard piece of equipment. You can see that stacking them up here.
Oh, yeah.
It does two each for the bottom, and the top layer is a single because it's an odd number, 5.
It's like a weird symphony in here, kind of.
Oh, constantly it is, yeah. And when it's not running, it's very depressing for me. You want to hear that noise. You can see this a 2001 space
Odyssey. Right.
You can see it grabbed 2 that time, and that's doing a tool change.
Where will all this water go?
A lot of this will go to BJ's.
Okay.
Up and down the East Coast.
I don't know what I was imagining, but it's a lot bigger than I thought.
Yeah, it's bigger than a bread box.
Right now there's cans and bottles all overhead and making their way through here like marble madness, it looks like.
I think that's one of your flavors. You like that? Toasted coconut, maybe?
Yeah.
The light.
These guys are moving fast. Now we're going up. Bird's eye view. Wow. Now, this is where you come for a profile picture. Hey guys. What's happening up here?
Well, the bottles come in bulk form, and we single file them, so they fight. It's like a highway converting into one lane. So it does it a lot more. Yeah, but we do it a lot more efficiently than the road department.
Yeah, if everyone could get in line like this, there wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
Wow. And this is all plastic bottles, unlike the cans we sell earlier. Do you know what's the most popular, like, size or configuration?
Well, we probably run the majority of 1 liter bottles.
Okay.
And 2 liters has been declining for the last 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. This bottle is going as far as the eye can see. Do you have a favorite part of the line?
Right here.
Yeah?
Where's Jeffrey? great.
Back downstairs.
So I try to come out every day at 11:30 and break Al for lunch. So you get a terrific view of everything, and you know what you always see is a problem where it could be a dangerous situation, and guys will never complain, but I can deploy the maintenance guys to fix things. You spend a lot of time out here, you see things that are systemic and need attention. So.
Right. Bird's eye view.
Yeah.
It's very overwhelming.
All simple.
All right, we're in a new room now.
So this is water purification. These are reverse osmosis platforms. Each one purifies about 300 gallons a minute of water. So we use about 900 gallons a minute of water.
Wow.
So a lot of H2O. You wouldn't want to have our water bill.
I'm sure that's true.
Oh, it's staggering.
I don't want to have our water bill.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wow. Well, I guess that's the key to the whole thing, though.
It is the key to the whole thing, is water. And trying to conserve it as well. Because with RO, you can have about a 10% loss of water. And what we try to do is recover that water and reuse it in some, rinsing cycles that you don't need pure water. So.
I can smell your coconut.
Yeah.
Can you smell it?
It smells great.
What?
Hello.
Hello.
We were running 12 packs just a minute ago. Now they went to a cardboard box. And this will be a rainbow pack. So that's a 32 pack or something.
Okay.
So that'll be for a club store. All right, let's abandon ship.
Okay. You don't have to answer if you don't want to, but what's your favorite flavor?
Cranberry lime, mandarin. Mandarin's really up there.
Yeah, I like that one too.
After the tour, we finished our interview in Crowley's office.
My father and his brothers were very good at reinvesting every penny back into making the latest and greatest and keeping your costs in check. If I went to a factory and I saw the guy driving a Cadillac and working, a split shift or, 40 hours a week, they weren't going to be there next year. There were 96 bottlers in Worcester County. There were so many neighborhood bottlers, and you just couldn't be. You had to grow, and you had to get as big as your customers. And there's been so much consolidation in the grocery side of things. You look at Kroger buying Albertsons right now. So you have to have relationships with these giant, giant companies. And we've been able to grow with our customers. So we have, you just love guys like Big Y. I mean, they're the best. Market Basket, Roach Brothers, the Independents. But, they'll be around in New England, but they're not in a lot of the rest of the country. It's the Kroger banner or nothing, or Publix banner down south. And to do well with those guys, you've got to be sophisticated and you've got to protect yourself. So back in the day, it was just hit or miss. You could go, go broke in a heartbeat. And we've been fortunate, we've been lucky, but we've worked very hard.
Is there a next generation that has embraced all of that in your family?
There are 18 grandkids, and I think we have 4 working here. And, you know, they're all in marketing. You know, who wants to be a grunt down in the factory? That's kind of passé. But that's really important. That's what I still do. I'm out in the factory every day, and we have 4 factories now, and it's, I think, important. But we have really a professional management team. We have guys, we have a lot of depth. It's not us as the Crowley family. It's our team, and we have, you know, a lot of people that know a lot more than Ralph and me, and these guys get it done every day.
How many states and countries do your products go to now?
We like doing a business in America. We're in all 50 states right now. We have employees in all 50 states. And we are very strong in the Caribbean. You can find us at Harrods in London, but it's a specialty American thing. You can find us, but we don't spend a lot of time thinking about that. There's so much room to grow in this country, and we're very comfortable in this country. We have good laws. We have good manufacturers. It's amazing. And you know, like China, I mean, food safety in China is like, it's an oxymoron. I remember the melanin in children's formula. They put sheetrock powder in there to trick the measurements. So we're hanging in the U.S. The next generation can worry about global stuff. Our board members are always challenging, you've got to be international. We used to not be in New York. We used to be not in Clinton, Massachusetts. You can remember those days very well when we had little four trucks going out every day. Now we have 150 trucks going out, route trucks every day. So there's a lot we can still do here without trying to spread your wings in Europe.
Let me ask you about a trend, spiked seltzer. Everyone's making one now.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Spiked seltzer, it's following the perfect pattern of boom splat. Boom splat is these take off like crazy and then splat. What's taken over right now are the pre-mixed cocktails, vodka. There's a little bit of it's the malt taste that I think hurts the spiked seltzers, and it's a lot cleaner taste to have just a vodka or just an ethyl base of alcohol. So we have a lot of other equipment. We do a lot of multi-packing, rainbowing, and we were out at a plant in Michigan buying a $5 million rainbow thing that combined, you know, 4 different flavors in an automated fashion. So we have a lot of that going in for our seltzers. But most of the spiked seltzers were being sold in these multi-packs. We were at this factory buying it. It was 200,000 square feet, brand new. They had a $5 million rainbow thing. They had all the stuff rainbowed. It was all out of code because it was old. It wasn't moving. Mm-hmm. So it's shrinking. It's still relevant. We have one. It's called Arctic Chill.
Yep.
And we work in conjunction with Harpoon Brewing. Harpoon, great, great people. Dan Canary is, you know, the founder, and his nephew just married my brother's youngest daughter. So it's all incestuous here.
Huh.
But they distribute it, but it's we run Happy Dads. We run a variety of spike seltzers, but it seems to be over.
Wow.
A little bit. And then we have everyone trying to chase us down to put CBD and THC. It's like, no, I don't want to do it. And we didn't want to do the spiked seltzer either with our name, you know, because you got the kid seltzer, you try to be a wholesome product, and then kid accidentally grabs the polar spiked seltzer, and it's like, yeah. So we had a lot of second thoughts. So it really doesn't look like a polar product. It's an adult beverage, but we try to avoid the fray.
Well, what's going to be the next big thing if it's not CBD and if spiked seltzer is last week?
We love just plain seltzer. You just can't beat it. I mean, you think about the national brand, some of the big sellers, it's all phosphoric acid, salt, artificial flavors. I drink that stuff, and it's just like having a Pop-Tart or candy. It's like, no, it's not real. I think our products are here to stay. I think the flavored seltzers, we've been doing this for over 130 years, seltzers, and that's like the best thing there is. The CO2 is a natural preservative. It gets rid of any of the pathogens. It suffocates. When you know to grow something, you need oxygen, and the CO2 gets rid of that. So our strength is our seltzers. We do fine with other things, but most of our we're betting the ranch on plain old seltzer.
Let's do a lightning round. How much seltzer do you drink in a day?
At least 2 or 3 12-ounce cans or a 1-liter bottle, at least.
How much carbonation is the right amount? How much bite do you like?
I like a lot. 4.0 is okay, so if you had a 4.0 volume in a 2-liter bottle, you stuck a balloon over the top of it, you shook it at 8 liters of dissolved gas. So I like a 4 volume CO2. A lot of our competitors are low CO2. We've run stuff that's like a 2.8, and it's lousy. I like a solid amount, a 4 volume of CO2.
Will we ever see the day of the bespoke door-to-door seltzer salesman delivery guy come back, or is that over?
Oh, it's so hard, that door-to-door, you know, spikes. We do it. We sell a lot. Box.com, Amazon, that's the delivery system. But we sell hundreds of thousands of cases that way. And you just can't imagine. I mean, the delivery costs are more than the cost of goods sold. But if you're in New York City and you have a 5-floor walk-up, it's tough. And you know, that's where SodaStream makes sense. That's the only place it makes sense, but because it's all about water quality. And I showed you our reverse osmosis, and it's all about the quality of water. That's what makes a good seltzer, and that's what we've committed to. So when you carbonate your sink seltzer, it's not very good because it's a lot of dissolved solids in there. You've got, you know, chlorine, so nothing like a polar seltzer.
How is a new flavor approved? Is there a panel? Does it get a certain number of votes? How does that work?
There are so many different ways. We had a sweet 16 or unsweet 16, as we called it. And we had thousands of people fighting to make the seasonals a permanent flavor. And it was social media. It was my nephew and nieces come up with this stuff. It used to be a seltzer with a flavorist is right across the hall from me. He and I would do things ad hoc in about 15 minutes. Now these guys take about a month to make a flavor choice. They're a lot more deliberate than we were, but we were a lot quicker. We'd make decisions very, very quickly. But it's that next generation. They're very, very thoughtful.
Was there ever a flavor that flopped that surprised you?
Flavor that flopped us? we had so many massive flops. Boston cream pie tasted just like Boston cream pie, but it was an utter disaster. I think we had a cinnamon apple, not a cinnamon apple, but a pumpkin spice kind of thing. Disaster. We've had some, and that was probably when Ralph and I were making the decisions more than the kids there. We've really honed in on citrusy type things that work. When you try to make something taste like, I think Jones Soda came out with a Thanksgiving turkey and gravy. And it's, it tastes like turkey and gravy, but do you want that in a drink? So we know where to go now.
What happens with the, back stock of that when it doesn't work? Do you send the employees home with it?
We recycle it or you give it away. One of the sleepers, I have one that's coming back. This is really a fun flavor.
Jalapeno citrus margarita. Yeah.
And it's a spike. It has some heat to it, and it's delicious. So we're going to be introducing this. This is a Cinco de Mayo seltzer because it's Mexican hot. And that will be coming out for Cinco de Mayo. I think we're going to produce it in March and have it in the trade, April. So it's a really fun flavor. And that's kind of pushing the envelope of what a flavor should be, because it has that margarita kind of thing to it, but it does have some heat. So that's a lot of fun.
What's been your favorite part about working here all these years? What do you love about this job?
Oh, it's definitely the people. I mean, it's a second family. You know everybody, you know the kids, and they're just dear friends. I mean, it really, it's all about the people, and both sides, and sales, marketing, manufacturing, it's the people.
I probably would have to give my press pass back if I didn't ask this, but how's the economy feel to you? Rising inflation, you know, there's been a lot of conversation about consumer prices. How are we looking?
You know, it's pretty ugly out there. We, from an energy standpoint, 2 years ago, I made some long-term commitments and contracts for fuel, gas, and electricity. And those costs have soared. And I'll be, at the end of 23, I'm coming off those contracts. Hopefully, we'll do something other than what we're doing now to get out of it. Emptying the strategic oil reserves is insane. Money's readily available. There's tons of money. We don't need that. We need stability. And it's so hard to get people. The only area we're short are probably drivers. But we never laid anyone off. We were an essential product because we're food. And we haven't slowed down. But it's hard getting deliveries. So we used to be a very precisely oiled machine. It was just in time. We'd bring the bottles and cans in when we need it. We have to probably have 10 days worth of empty stock inventory on hand just in case, because the supply chain's so unreliable. So rails aren't moving effectively. It's kind of scary in the Midwest. There's not very much water in the Mississippi, so the barges are running aground. And that's, you know, we rely on corn for our sugar. It's amazing. When we were a much smaller company, we used 220 million pounds of corn. Now we're four times the size, and I think we're at 150 million pounds. So we're focusing on seltzer, and it's very exciting that we're able to be as successful. And I see so many friends that are my age that are retiring because their companies are shutting down. It's kind of scary times.
Well, thank you for showing me around. This was a great pilgrimage, and I appreciate all of the time, and thanks for showing us how it all works.
Thank you. It was wonderful, Ian.
You've been listening to the audio tour I took of the Polar Seltzer Factory in Worcester, Massachusetts. Apologies if I've been too bubbly. Thanks to Polar's Christopher Crowley for showing me around, and to all of the plant's employees who let me into their workspace. You can see photos and videos of the tour at WAMC.org and on WAMC's social media channels. All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.